It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth. Today's show is about an issue I've encountered in raising each of my four children, and I still haven't figured it out. How do you get through the middle school years with a kid who is still enthusiastic about outdoor activity? Getting younger kids moving is relatively easy, but these tween years are hard, especially for girls, when issues of self-image, independence, and the lure of electronics all conspire to push them to sedentary pursuits. How do we help them choose an identity that includes healthy activity? We have three experts who have met this challenge from three different perspectives, a parent, a coach, and the leader of a nonprofit organization, to talk about keeping tweens active and outside. And I want to thank all three of you for being here, because this is a really interesting topic and we've got so much to say about it. Harlow Robinson is with the Healthy Futures Program, which works to keep kids active, not only outside, but just keep moving. Thanks for being with us, Harlow.
Yeah, it's good to be here, Charles.
Eric Heil is a middle school PE teacher and coach at Golden View, also well known to a lot of folks as a Arctic Man skier, but we're not talking about Arctic Man today. Thanks for being with us, Eric.
Glad to be here.
And Aaron Kirkland, our sort of go-to parent on Outdoor Explorer. Aaron does the akonthego.com blog and website. Thanks for being with us, Aaron.
Well, it's a pleasure.
So I was threatening my 12-year-old daughter that we were going to talk about this and I'd probably bring her up. And she wasn't too worried because she figures none of her friends listen to our show.
Yeah, you're safe there, right?
Yeah, we're talking more to parents. But it's an issue that I think a lot of parents have to deal with is how do you keep kids, especially daughters, active? And they're kind of making a choice about what the rest of their life is going to be like at some level. You know, are they going to be the kind of kid who sees or person or adult who sees himself as an indoor person or somebody who sees himself as an outdoor person? Do you feel that same issue or that same importance on this?
Oh,
this moment?
Absolutely, Charles. I think, with our sons, I have one who's 19 now and one who's turns 9 next week, and we're staring tweenhood again in the face. But, you know, we were talking before the show, all of a sudden you wake up one day and this little person who was so up for any outdoor activity all of a sudden has to stop and think about it because, well, maybe my friends aren't going to go and it won't be quite so cool. And as parents, you know, we have to start thinking a little bit about how we're going to approach this stuff with our kids. And we are a very active outdoor family, as is yours. And, you know, that's a value system, a deep-rooted, soulful kind of thing. And we want our kids to grow up with that. So we do have to start thinking about it a little more.
Yeah. And probably the best way to make sure your kid doesn't want to do whatever you like doing is to make him do it, right? So if you, if you wake your kid up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go fishing and they don't want to go fishing,
right,
you're probably going to create a person who hates fishing.
Right, right. And thus begins the years of finding a balance and listening to your kid, I think, exactly with fishing. Well, if they don't want to get up early and go fishing, well, maybe you can go on a hell of a charter the half day that leaves at noon.
Right.
Because they're, you know, they're changing in so many ways. And I sort of feel like we had to do some growing up and maturing too, because it's not about what we want anymore. We're a group. We're actually a group, a thinking, cohesive group. And we need to make ourselves consciously be that way.
So Eric Heil, you work with 7th and 8th graders every day. And you have the authority of school that you can make them do what you tell them to do. But do you find the same thing of trying to get inside their heads to motivate them?
Absolutely. I do work with 7th graders. I'm primarily a full-time 8th grade health teacher and involved with the physical education program. We run cardio days on our Friday school-wide with a common fitness goal. I'm also a parent. I'm a proud parent of three kids and a beautiful wife, and we're kind of going to talk about girls. I just up front want to say I'm not a female. I don't know the full experience with that, but I am blessed with some great perspectives from two women who made it through that time and are both very active. And but at the time, my daughter's a sophomore. She's a full-fledged socialite. And at the same time, academically motivated, and is a four sport athlete at her high school. So, we come from a family who's extremely outdoorsy, and also involved in classic sports as well. And adjusting to the time demands of high school, and just growth and whatnot for the girls' age group, learning what and adjusting as a dad. And then at the same time, working in the field within the schools and my job, I mean, really, is to inspire kids to want to be active, you know, take mm-hmm. charge of your life and have the myopic opportunity to see them and talk to them and really find out what the challenges are on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're not a parent, you're not in a school, you really don't see mm-hmm. what it is. You know, they leave, they go in the school, they've got a day of work ahead.
They definitely don't want you there.
And as my kids, as I have no idea what goes on in my own kids' school day, it's the primary social dynamic that is driving their life. Then they come home and have a relationship with us mm-hmm. at home. And as you mentioned, you know, there's a change. You know, you learn to compromise, to find a way to be supportive, but at the same mm-hmm. time have a demand that they're going to continue the value system that the family hopes to have, mm-hmm. and everybody has to get in it together. And
well, that school setting is so interesting because you. If you see seventh graders just starting middle school, you see a group of terrified people, you know, because the change from elementary school to middle school is yeah. probably the biggest change we go through in life in terms of something that's, you know, you're with one teacher, you know everybody, you're the top of the heap, and then suddenly you're the smallest
one. Change. Yeah. I've had one really common thing has always been, you're afraid as a kindergartner to go to school. Then you get mm-hmm. there, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
As a sixth grader, you start to get a little... You start to see it sense a little bit of resistance. As a seventh grader, that kid is so excited. There isn't a greater kid to get active with and mm-hmm. and have fun with in a PE class than the seventh graders. And the eighth graders are nervous again because they're going to high school. But then once they get to high school, they realize this is the best place. And then as a senior, you're going to do the same thing. You're getting concerned about your next step. So levels of change and maturity are a huge part of the psychology that the kids are experiencing. I think as a parent and a teacher, you just have to understand what's going on, you know, psychosocially mm-hmm. for these kids, and recognize that developmentally they are in places that we tend to forget, mm-hmm. and we want them to just say, you know, just throw the switch, you know, it's time to move on. But they're not, we're human.
They're things going take through time, a lot of
and they have their own
thoughts.
Life experience yeah. that you can't manage. So, but eighth graders, a lot of people would say, you know, really difficult attitudes to contend with. But, you know, if you understand them, they're not difficult. They're really easy to get along with. And you just have to allow them to be what they are and who they are, because it's the most dynamic change in life going from a child into an adult.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the real dynamic.
You want to be along with them and not yeah. be not be the
yeah. It's not the schedule. It's the life change.
What I think is as a parent is that you feel like by the time they get to like 11, 12, you feel like, oh, I know how to be a parent, and then suddenly you don't know how
darn
to do
them.
It anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, that's over.
It's totally over. Yeah. Harlow Robinson, you tell us that Healthy Futures was started because of the issue of keeping kids active and keeping them doing stuff. And that's an issue in our culture as a whole, right? I mean, we're not as active. Kids are not as active as they were a generation ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I think all the research shows that as far as physical activity, really at all age levels, it's diminished greatly since a generation ago. The Healthy Futures program was a real grassroots initiative started by a local couple, Bonnie Sosa and her husband Sam Young, that were genuinely concerned about their own kids and in the community, and just seeing at a young age the decrease in physical activity. And so, you know, initially our program, Healthy Futures, it's grown. It's been, you know, 10 years since it got off the ground, and we're now statewide, 150 some schools, and we have over 10,000 kids participating in the program. But the target for us has historically been elementary school age, because, you know, that's the greatest opportunity to really plant some seeds and develop some living skills with children. But this conversation today about middle school, I think, is really germane, because what we've seen is it is the tween years, and we see a lot of kids get left behind at that age. They're kind of between adult and child, and you know, we do all this work planting seeds, but there are kids that are starting to identify at that age that they're either, you know, they either feel like they're on the bus or not, and mm-hmm. it's us and them. And if they feel like, well, that's not me, I'm not that exactly. kind of person.
That's what I was when I was a little kid. Now I'm
right.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, it's great to be at the table here today. I was, you know, just off the air before the show talking about how 2 days ago we just kicked off our first middle school program, Healthy Futures did. Mm-hmm. And we're really excited about it. We feel like this is a population that needs the most support.
Mm-hmm. Now, for folks who don't, anybody who has an elementary school kid knows about your program with the toys,
right.
basically, and a kid completes a log showing that they did a certain amount of athletic activity during a time period, and then turn that into their PE teacher, and they win the toy, and
right.
and then on a certain day the school is full of them, right?
Exactly.
Which is great. And that was a great, you know, my youngest daughter, who was pretty active already, it was definitely something that made her want to fill that thing out and make sure that she was active a certain number of times a week. It really worked for
yeah.
her, and but that's getting at the younger kid psychology, right? I mean,
right.
that's sort of how that works.
Yeah, we're going to do a lot of trial and error with the middle school, and the best place to start is to go talk to the kids
mm-hmm.
and try to get a feel for what motivates them. And surprisingly, from what we've heard from them, they still like those plastic, you know, little prizes.
Yeah.
So we'll be doing a little bit of that. You know,
that's the thing about this age, that you've still got the teddy bear, but you've
right.
also got the razzle.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Both. Yeah.
Yeah. And we, the program's going to be a little different, but it still centers around logging activity and building awareness about your physical activity and creating a conversation that they'll be having with their peers and their teachers, and hopefully their parents or support at home.
Mm-hmm.
The prizes, the program, instead of being month-long logs, they'll be a little more immediate, 6 1-week logs. So the turnaround is quicker. Middle school, things are happening faster. We're not real confident that they'll hold on to a log for a month. But
I'm just reminiscing. Yeah. Like, of course. Yeah. I mean, if they're not in the moment, it's not
right.
happening.
If you get
right?
my kid to remember something for a day, I think I'd be pretty good.
He walks out the door with a backpack. We're
yeah,
good.
That's right.
And we do.
It's Outdoor Explorer, and my name is Charles Wolforth. We're talking about getting tweens outdoors, how to keep your middle school age kid active so they'll be active for life. And I've got three guests who have a lot of knowledge on this subject. You're just hearing from Harlow Robinson from Healthy Futures, Eric Heil, who's a middle school PE teacher and coach at Golden View, and Aaron Kirkland, who writes the akonthego.com blog and is also a parent and also sort of an outdoor explorer regular.
That's right.
I want to talk a little bit more before we get totally into sort of solutions or strategies about what the problem is and how kids are influenced to stop being active at this age. And my guest, Eric Heil, did some really helpful research. He asked some of his students to write down on sticky notes their thoughts on this, and we've got some of them, and I'd like to go around and read a few. We've got a whole table full of sticky notes here from kids' notes. And what was the question you asked them to answer, Eric?
Well, I let them know what I was doing, and I just have great conversations in my classroom with my students. And they told him, said, you know, that there's a challenge. It's a challenge is that girls leaving elementary school tend to have a history of stopping participating in things that they normally did. And so I asked the kids to identify themselves as male or female confidentially. They made a note and their perspective on why girls stop participating. And I thought we got some just incredibly honest answers from both girls and boys in terms of what those perspectives were. And so what I brought here were the females, because mm-hmm. go to the source. I mean, mm-hmm. we can guess all we want as adults or parents, but asking them directly gave us some great insight. I think it validated a lot of our notions, but there's actually just a little bit more emotion that you can read into mm-hmm. these things that's dear to them. There's it's something that they feel strongly about.
There's not a lot of uncertainty or ambivalence in these. I mean, here's one. This is a girl in school. They want to look nice and not get sweaty. They're afraid to get judged.
Well, and that carries into some of the, I have mine all lined up uh-huh. with the theme, as most everybody does, but the idea of being so self-conscious is
over and over again.
I think, especially with girls, right? You know, everybody remembers being that awkward middle schooler. I used to teach skiing, and one of the toughest age groups to teach was this one because they don't want to look stupid. No way do I want to look stupid. So, this is an underlying thing.
The self-conscious thing comes up over and over again. And also, you know, part of the self-consciousness comes through in this one. Once you're in middle school, things start to change because you don't feel as comfortable with guys as you did in elementary.
Oh, great.
You know,
point.
So that's very true.
Great point. There's a huge shift in how they relate to each other, because, you know, my son's actually starting to do that now. So he mm-hmm. has a lot of girl friends that he grew up with since kindergarten. And now he in fact just said yesterday that at recess, they don't play together anymore. Mm-hmm. And so he's trying to sort that out at 9. Mm-hmm. What a great point.
Yeah. By the time you get in middle school, it's a big deal.
Oh,
the girls are maturing earlier. We've mm-hmm. always known this. I mean, so just think from developmental terms, girls are developing sooner. They're a little more mature. They're physically going through changes that boys aren't. Socially, they're going through changes that boys aren't quite. I think it's a great instinct for the human body, or for humans to give the girls that advantage at that time. But culturally, we still have some very giant conceptions or expectations, or, you know, what it means to be female in today's world is still largely image based and mm-hmm. Performance. Fair performances, mm-hmm. I think, become something very real that the mm-hmm. girls experience. Fear of rejection is massive, and their acceptance comes from their peers, both in how they act and how they look, and then for themselves even to just have a strong sense of self and who they are, because mm-hmm. they're changing.
And that's for boys. Athletic competition is almost a requirement of that age group.
Right.
You know, that's, you're measuring yourself against each other. And if you don't do it, then you're kind of, you don't really get to check out of that competition. If you don't do it, you're just a loser in the competition. Whereas girls have different settings they can get into. So if they think, well, I'm really not that good at sports, I'm going to compete in the appearance category. In the academic category. So that's one way that they can drop out of sports.
Right.
Hello?
Yeah, right. I'm seeing a comment here that really echoes one of the stickies here. The girl says, I think girls stop participating in sports after elementary school because they think that getting sweaty is not cool and that sports are for boys and pageants are for girls. You really see a social stigma there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
Do you, some girls, however, sort of check in with sports and sort of define themselves with sports. And I wonder if that maybe is those who show more talent.
I would say that success in anything mm-hmm. breeds confidence. And so kids who do or have experienced success as kids and received kudos and value from their population, including the adults, I think absolutely have a little more strength to push through it.
Mm-hmm.
They're not immune to the social expectation. I mean, trying to still balance the competition of you're better than I am, you might look different than I am. It's a very vicious, I mean, even the adult women I've spoken to recall the vindictiveness of the female population and how very subtle these games are that boys don't have an experiencing, and but women and girls know how real it is.
Mm-hmm. Aaron, do you remember those years and how that was like for you?
Well, I do, but your comment, Charles, about maybe taking activities that you were excellent at, you know, and talent. I mean, I was very, very involved soccer player from a really young age all the way through college. And so that is how I did not fit in totally socially. But, you know, if you're the girl who's the jock, you're cool. So that was kind of how I found my niche. But I want to make sure we address things that are not sports related. So especially in Alaska, where we've got other activities that kids can excel at, you know, like kayaking and and hiking and skiing and other things that aren't traditionally what we think about as outside activities. And I think we're really lucky to have that. But I think, like Harlow was talking about, plugging kids of this age into that kind of stuff, we have to have a process for that that is going to encompass being together with your pals and, you know, finding a mentor type adult and things like that. So I want to make sure that we address both parts of the outdoor part.
And I think that camp and junior Nordic and that kind of thing are a really good way of keeping kids involved where they're with peers and in maybe a non-competitive setting. And that should be on the list of things we talk about in the second half when we get into some of those issues about what are the strategies. But you're right, you know, the family setting is very different from the school setting. And although you want the kids to be involved in school sports just for fitness, because it's really tough through the winter to stay fit if you're not doing an organized regular activity.
Yeah, and it's almost expected now, right?
I feel like if a kid is not involved in some kind of organized sport during the winter, they're going to enjoy the family activities a lot less because their fitness level is simply not going to be there to do them. I mean, I guess everybody's nodding around the table. Yeah. They can't see you when you nod on the radio.
Yeah,
right. Yes.
It's a fascinating topic. We've got a lot more to talk about. In the second half, we're going to get more into the strategies and things that you can do as a parent to help your kid develop that self-desire to be active as they go through the tween years. We're talking on Outdoor Explorer today about keeping tweens active. And we have three experts in the room: Harlow Robinson from Healthy Futures, Eric Kyle, a PE and health teacher, and Aaron Kirkland, a parent and the author of the AK On The Go website and blog. We'll be back with more, but now it's time for the Outdoor Explorer calendar. This week is the time to get your skis ready. There are four ski swaps in Anchorage, all scheduled for this Saturday, October 19. The Eagle River Nordic Ski Club will host a ski swap at Grinning Middle School, 9 a.m. to noon on Saturday. Gear drop-off is tomorrow, Friday, from 5 to 7 p.m., and Saturday, 8 to 9. There will also be sign-ups for Eagle River Nordic Ski Club, Junior Nordic, and Adult Master Ski programs, plus ski rental and ski waxing demonstrations. For more info on the Eagle River Swap, go to ernsc.org, ernsc.org. In Girdwood, the 2013 Ski and Sports Swap will be Saturday at the Alyeska Day Lodge from noon to 5 p.m. Bring your quality used sporting equipment to sell from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. This is a fundraiser for Four Valleys Community School in Girdwood, and 25% of sales goes to help support the Girdwood Nordic Ski Club. For details on the Girdwood Ski Swap, go to skigirdwood.org. The University of Alaska Anchorage will host a community outdoor gear swap in the Student Union from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. this Saturday. This swap is open for the public and students. There will be free tables and consignment available. For more info, search UAA Outdoor Gear Swap on Facebook. Finally, the AK Ski Swap at West High School in Anchorage is this Saturday from noon to 5 p.m. The West High Swap is expanding this year to include new equipment and a Warren Miller movie. To tell us more, we have with us by phone Aaron Stiasny, director of the Alyeska Ski Club. Hi, Aaron.
Hi there, Charles.
Thanks much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So this is a big ski swap. This is a sort of like, I don't know, is it the biggest of the year? I know it's a really big one.
We like to say, it's probably the biggest ski swap in Alaska. We expect about 5,000 visitors.
Wow, 5,000, that's amazing. And the amount of gear that's there is huge. So if you're looking for used gear, this is a great place to go. And if you don't find it, you know, we mentioned the other Squaps. Sounds like you've made it a little bit easier for people who want to sell gear this year. You've made some changes.
Yeah, we made changes last year, actually, was the first year. And we went online. You can find registration at akskiswap.com, but it's an online consignment sale.
All right. And so if you want to sell your gear, what's the process?
If you want to sell your gear, just go visit akskiswap.com, register an account, and you're going to need to price each item, and then you can print your tags at home and tag the equipment. And then we have drop-off time at West High Friday, 5 to 7 p.m., which is in conjunction with the Warren Miller movie. You can also drop off your equipment Saturday, 9 to 1 p.m.
All right. So you drop off your equipment, and then you go in the auditorium and watch the Warren Miller movie?
That's the deal, yes. We linked it with the film. So for Friday, people can drop their equipment off and watch the film.
All right. And what time does the film start, and what's the admission fee for that?
The film on Friday is at 7 p.m. Admission is $15. Again, you can find the buy tickets link at akswap.com.
All right. And the swap is a... Is it a fundraiser, or where are the funds going that are coming from it?
For the swap, yes, Charles, it's a fundraiser for both Alyeska Ski Club. Alyeska Ski Club has a bunch of clubs, Alyeska Mighty Mites, the Masters, and the Junior Program. It's also a fundraiser for the University of Alaska Anchorage Ski Team.
All right. And... so for folks who haven't been to a swap, essentially you're presented with this huge amount of gear that you can choose from to get your, you know, get ready for the year. And you kind of have to know what you're looking for, right? I mean, it's not necessarily going to a shop where somebody's going to fit you. You have to a little bit have some knowledge of what you're up to, right?
Most definitely. You need to know what you're looking for. You know, there's a mad rush for our swap. So, you know, you need to have the one or two items you want to pick out. We have coaches and university athletes that are going to be there helping people, but really have your couple items and go looking.
Yeah, you got to know what you're after. Okay. And so it's a good idea to get there at noon for best selection, I imagine.
Yep, noon. We also offer for a book of raffle tickets for $20. You can get early admittance at 11:45. And that seems to work well for folks that don't want to be in the big rush.
Yeah, I hear you. Cool. Okay, well, thanks very much. Anything else you want to add, Aaron?
No, just thanks for having us, Charles, and hope to get a good turnout. I hope everybody goes to other swaps as well. It seems like it's going to be a busy swap weekend.
Yeah, it's funny that they all fell on the same day. Well, okay, thanks very much, Aaron Stiasny, director of the Alyeska Ski Club, and we'll have a link to that site that Aaron was mentioning and all of the other ski swaps mentioned on today's calendar. Go to alaskapublic.org, and you'll find that on today's show. Stay with us for the second half of the show. We'll continue to talk about getting tweens outdoors when Outdoor Explorer continues.
You are listening to Outdoor Explorer from KSKA Anchorage. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and iTunes. To see what's coming up on future programs and add your voice to the conversation, go to alaskapublic.org.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and our topic today is keeping tweens active. How do you make sure that your 11, 12, 13-year-old still wants to go outdoor, do family stuff outdoors, and also do stuff at school to stay fit or after school? And I've got three guests with me. Harlow Robinson is with the Healthy Futures Program, which is a statewide nonprofit which motivates kids to stay active. Eric Heil is a middle school a PE and health teacher and a coach and a noted athlete in the Arctic Man. And Aaron Kirkland writes akonthego.com blog and website. And now I wanted to get a little bit into how you keep your kid motivated. We talked about these issues that make kids not want to be active. We didn't get too much into the something that I've struggled with is the electronics social stuff that's happening, which seems to be very sedentary, more so than it was in the past. I don't know if you've encountered this, Aaron, but it seems like teenagers now, their social scene will often be related to a screen rather than just being with each other. And so that adds to the sedentary stuff they're doing by themselves. Together, they're doing sedentary stuff.
Well, true. But the advantage of all of this media is that, one, it's incredibly user-friendly, and kids, you know, if you want to solve a problem, give it to a kid because they'll figure it out for you. And two, a lot of agencies and organizations are figuring out how to tap into this as part of the bigger picture of outdoor activity. So, hey, take a picture of you and your bestie on top of your favorite, trailhead and post it on our Facebook page. They love that.
Yeah, get outside so you have something to put on your Facebook page.
Right. I sent in an awesome video done by some tweens who are out on an exploration with Chugach Children's Forest.
Yeah, and I think we've got that on our website.
Yeah, that's going to be up. These kids did the whole thing. They put in the music. They took the film. And they put in the captions. And so when you give them a task like that, which empowers their sense of leadership, and there's an outcome that's very cool, they're going to dig that. But you have to find that combination that's going to work. And some kids, you know, want to be part of the tech. Some kids want to be part of, you know, the Facebook scene. So finding it. And then once you hit on it, run. Do it.
Yeah, let them go. Yeah. Harlow?
Yeah, I think the emergence of technology has lended itself to making it easy for parents to keep their kids inside, too. That's something we haven't really discussed, but I think there's more concern about safety than there ever has been, whether that's merited or not. You know, the older generation always talks about how they got out on the, you know, played stickball on the cul-de-sac or what have you. And now it's real easy for a parent to keep their kid inside and plug them in and feel safe, feel that their kids are safer. So that's another aspect that I think plays into the decrease in physical activity, whether it's inside or out.
I think that's huge, and it comes up by the time you've hit those middle school years, you've already set those patterns. I've encountered it with I've had kids' friends over, and I send them into the park and say, you know, go explore the park, and then they come back and the other mom or dad is like, you did what?
Yeah.
You know? But the fact is that the probability of something bad happening to a kid when they're out playing in the park, especially at a middle school age, is very small.
Very low. Yeah, very, very low. And Richard Louv, who is kind of the guru of kids in the outdoors, not just the little ones, but bigger kids too. I mean, he has a load of statistics that document that kids who are outside on their own making the choices, as long as you've provided them with that foundation, they are more likely to engage in the right kind of choice. But for something to happen, like child abduction seems to be very, very high on the list, but it's actually a very
rare.
Small number.
Very, very rare.
And I think ironically, it's the information age and the technology that we have that the bad news is there in the 24-hour news cycle for us to see constantly. So there's a perception that our world that we live in is not as safe as it once was, although the statistics don't bear that out.
Well, and as a parent, it seems like the years pass really quickly, and your attitude towards your elementary school kid that might have been appropriate, it may no longer be appropriate for your middle schooler, and it can be hard to sort of say, you know, no, I'm not going to drive you to your friend's house. Get on your bike. You know, before you would have driven them because you would have thought, oh, you know, is it safe? But they're now at an age when they can ride. You got to just push them out and let them do that.
Hence the theme, right?
Right. You know,
gotta let them go.
It's a little bit of letting go, right?
If you really want to go, Yeah. Get yourself over there.
Mm-hmm. So, Eric, is there, you know, we talked quite a bit about girls being self-conscious and these developmental issues, and you brought in these comments that they provided, your students provided, which I just found so, so instructive, you know. What's the solution to that? I mean, how do you get through that issue of being self-conscious or feeling that self-image is threatened by being active? I mean, do you have any suggestions?
Well, a suggestion for getting kids active, how to get through the self-image and as a limitation is it would be difficult for me to explain. But I think that the way that we get our kids active is by expecting them to be active, and that's true whether they're at school or whether they're at home or as a community. We have to have the same kind of expectation that's something that's important in life, to be fit, to be healthy, to understand why it's important to take care of yourself, and that activity is a big part of that, no matter how small. So, mm-hmm.
And so that has to be part of just the message of parenting is it's simply an expectation. Right. We expect you to get dressed in the morning and brush your teeth. Yeah. This is part of being a person.
Yeah. And you bring up the media piece, and I want to say that, you know, we have these perceptions that in order to be considered active, you have to be this massive athlete. And that's a huge hurdle for kids. Mm-hmm. I think as we look at these notes from kids too, it's all about recognizing the small things, that you take your dog for a walk, that you help around the house, you do the chores, you're acknowledging that every little bit is not sedentary and that it adds up and that it's a habit. It's just the idea of work ethic and that you're participating. And then, of course, receiving the response you need that says, good job, you know, I'm doing the right thing. And then you develop that positive self-concept that everything's going, you're doing the right thing, and people appreciate it.
I want to get a little bit more into this competition issue. My oldest, four kids, two oldest are in college. My oldest son loved skiing, wanted to cross-country ski all the time, was on the team at West High, didn't care that he was not that, you know, wasn't in the front, but really worked hard and did it until he ran out of time as a senior year. He had to quit the team because it takes so much time. Then my daughter was also loved skiing, but she got into that competitive setting, and she would, the first couple of races, she puked because she was just so desperate to do well. And then a couple of races, she kind of laid off and didn't even try. And then she quit the team. But then she started coaching at Junior Nordic, and that was perfect for her. You know, it's 3 days a week. She's making a little money, and the kids love her, and so that worked out really well. So for her, the competition was a big negative. It was just something she couldn't really handle at that age. And I wonder if we emphasize competition too much. In middle school, we have competitive teams. Then you get into high school, and it's really very competitive, and sort of the level is raised so high. And does that drive some kids away? Erin?
You know what? Just speaking from my own experience, when I started playing soccer at age 5, and it was twice a week, we had games on Saturdays, and it was all good. Got into high school, realized, well, I have to play every day. But that was fun, too, and I did very well. I got to college and, pushed it up another level. But now what I'm noticing is that college level of expectation for competition is showing up in middle school with comp soccer, particularly because that's where my area of interest lies. So I kind of wonder if the pressure being put upon kids for this high level competition stuff is maybe being, acting as a detriment to, because, 25 years ago, wow, long time ago. But I didn't start feeling that kind of pressure until later high school, college.
I feel like that's moved to lower ages.
Yeah, I really, really do. And I'm, as a parent now with my younger son, who's pretty athletic, I just don't want to do that, which is a hard thing because his buddies are all doing it. So that's just kind of a personal two cents thrown in there. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a real good point. And you can kind of run into this issue of, well, can you start a sport in middle school, or is it too late because the other kids already know how to do it?
Right. And what's that going to do to confidence? Well, what's what's worse? The pressure of competition? Because I was very much like your daughter. I pushed so hard that I ended up quitting in college because it just was not fun anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want that for my younger kids.
Yeah.
a lot of stress involved. I'm in the mm-hmm. soccer world too. But just to bring it back to, you know, kids and just choosing things, they're just looking for their place. You know, your daughter mm-hmm. finding that she's just a great coach and that she's enjoying that. That's the key. I mean, the whole part of participating in anything is finding out how you fit into it at a level that you love, and anything else is too much or not enough, and mm-hmm. and looking for that. But how do you get there? The yeah. key is, how do you get there? How do you find it? That's where, you know, school physical education programs are designed to introduce kids to lots of different things, so that they, should they find themselves in a social setting, that they can have a little bit of skill, feel mm-hmm. a little more successful, not afraid to try,
mm-hmm.
and then of course maybe discover something new
that they really like. Well, and some of our Olympians have discovered their sports pretty late. I guess James Southam tried cross-country skiing because he couldn't make the basketball team.
He couldn't make basketball, right.
And he
right.
goes to the Olympics.
I think that's a great example. And, you know, I'm a little disappointed sometimes at how, you know, I grew up playing basketball, and I really didn't touch a ball until my later elementary years. And I was a late bloomer, and it worked out fine for me. But with my own children, there's kind of a fast track to, you know, if your kid wants to be a good, you know, high school basketball player, they have to be joining the comp leagues by second grade.
Right.
There's kind of this expectation. And mm-hmm. as far as competition goes, I personally, my feeling is competition is a healthy, should be viewed as a healthy, it should be a rewarding part of life. I just think that it's the expectation, this kind of win at all cost view of competition is really unhealthy, and I think the perspective needs to be reshaped towards effort and finding it's a real individual thing. And, you know, the kids that need the most support are the ones that probably aren't going to do well in
that's
team
right.
sports.
Bingo.
So, you know, we need to find what satisfies them and is personally rewarding. And, you know, out in the running scene, 90-95% of the people that join races, they are doing it for a personal, individual fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
So
when you reach adulthood, you realize it. Well,
yes.
I'm never going to win a race. It would be absurd, but I can race that guy who's next to me, and I can just do my best and see my time and enjoy the social world.
Right.
But I think there's a level of maturity before you're ready to do that.
Sure. And I think we, as coaches, teachers, parents, if we are not instilling that it's okay to fail, or mm-hmm. actually fail is not the right word, but it's okay if you don't win.
Or you're not the best.
Out. You're not right. the best. Just, you know, don't right. set up these false expectations. So, you know, I think there's when we talk about girls and building self-esteem around whether it's a sport or just physical activity outside, I think it's critical that they have positive, successful experiences.
Yeah.
And what no limitations it? That might mm-hmm. be perceived as that's for guys and girls shouldn't do that. Those
gotta,
kind of things
don't
have
send
to be,
those messages.
Yeah,
right.
You got to be encouraging your daughter to be active at all costs.
Mm-hmm. Harlow, what's the right amount of outdoor or any kind of activity for a kid, you know, as an elementary school or you
right.
specialize in then moving up? Is it?
Yeah. Sure.
3 days a week, half an hour, I don't know.
You know, nationally, the guideline that we look at, and I know in the Department of Public Health, which is a big supporter of what we do with their Get Out and Play campaign, 60 minutes a day, mm-hmm. Every day. That's a national guideline. Realistically, the kids, most of them are not getting that, especially, I think, we see a decrease in middle school age,
mm-hmm.
but that's what we should be shooting for.
It's hard to get that if you're not on a team or
yeah.
some kind of organization.
I'd love them all to ride their bikes to school. You know, it's funny. There's a shift of you know, kids just go outside and play, but when you hit middle school, you know you just don't play because you want to go walk around and talk to your friends, and mm-hmm. it's like riding your bike to school. Well, unless you have a purpose, you know, a lot of kids aren't mm-hmm. going to do that, and
yeah.
it would be great if we can encourage that.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, on the the stickies we're looking at, there are a lot of them. The trend is the self-image mm-hmm. and the concerns about looking sweaty or being mm-hmm. sweaty and how peers perceive you. But the other trend that I really saw with these were not enough time.
Time.
Yes.
So you got to get up early for school. There's so much homework. The schedule is busy, busy, busy. And I think that's another key issue that impacts, you know, whether it's a team sport or just having an hour with nothing on your schedule where you can go out to the park with your friends and throw a ball around or, you know, just be a kid.
Playing in the street isn't looked upon as very safe anymore. Mm-hmm. The ability to get where they need to go to be with friends is a challenge. They're not driving yet. They want the independence, not quite available to go do that.
Yeah.
And the time management ability of them is pretty challenged because they're you know, social media is not a bad thing. I think you have to recognize there's positives to it, mm-hmm. But managing the time, the stimulation, the ability to turn it off from time to time isn't something that it's something they have to discover on their own. As with all things, you can't tell kids what to do. They have to kind of come to it on their own terms, find a compromise where it's a balance and look for the opportunity to, that's how they get their friends involved. I mean, that's how they get together. It is the mode of communication. And you can be in the same room and be in five different conversations and still be active. And there's plenty of opportunities for kids to get up and go. And one of the things I recognize in my journals I do at school is that they're actually quite active. They got a lot going on. If you can just see it in the small places,
it's very busy.
It's not always about, they think they have to be on teams. It's just mm-hmm. not the case. I went hunting with my dad. How's cleaning the house? Does that count? Absolutely. I mean, mm-hmm. it's got to be able to be appreciated for elevated heart rate for all things besides sitting down.
Mm-hmm. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. My guests today are Eric Heil, you just heard from, who is at Golden View Middle School. Aaron Kirkland does the akonthego.com blog and website, and Harlow Robinson with Healthy Futures. And I want to talk a little bit about family activities and the strategies of keeping your child interested and active and wanting to go out and do the hunting trip like you mentioned, Eric, and wanting to go skiing on the weekend and be with the family and do stuff. One strategy I think is to create group activities. So let's go skiing and let's pick out two or three of your friends that you can bring along. That kind of thing can help.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, any outdoor activity you do, you can bring a couple buddies always. And we start doing that now. I think, and letting those kids kind of decide where you're going to go. Say, okay, we're going to go down the Seward Highway. Where should we go, guys? And then
you kind of
they're invested.
Right. And then you also have to expect that it's not going to be like the old days when you had fun walking side by side. They're going to disappear.
Oh, because they don't. Yeah. Right. I mean, this is the age of, you're either 10 steps in front of me or 10 steps behind me, mom and dad. And as parents, you have to start to be okay with that, because mm-hmm. this age so wants to be independent. And even with things like bear and moose safety, the elementary kids are just, it's drilled into their brains. And with this age group, they know it. And you have to have a little bit of trust that they're going to remember what to do. What we like to do is have, two, three, four kids together, go kayaking, go camping and let them, kind of hang out in their own tent, mm-hmm. single sex tent, of course. But engage in that as a group and understand that you've got them outside and you are all together. And then the next time you can plan something even bigger, mm-hmm. Take them mm-hmm. backpacking.
Hello?
My wife Gina and I, parents of an adult daughter who, during the middle school years, she would put up a big fight every time we would, and we were very outdoor oriented, active, but we would really try to set it up for success. We would make sure that our destination was, achievable. We really planned to make the whole experience, as fun as possible. Let her pick out her favorite food and do a nice cookout, and try to kind of do it in baby steps and not jump into a 3-day backpack trip right off the bat.
Right.
But what surprised us was when she would do a school report or talk to her friends, she would identify herself as being outdoorsy. Mm-hmm. And she'd always talk about how her favorite hobbies were backpacking or camping or mountain biking or hiking. And we would read those and just do a double take because that
right.
wasn't our perception. But
that's
I think
a way
that,
to be special. Yeah.
Yeah. And it just really, I think, reinforces as parents, we need to be aware of that resistance and remember who the adult is and our job as a role model.
One thing I found, and I've done a tremendous amount of camping and boating with my kids, is that making them team members, if they feel like they have some responsibility
yeah.
for some aspect of what
yeah.
you're doing, if whether it's putting up the tent or just moving the stuff off the boat or
yeah.
packing.
And problem solving.
Creating a team environment for the whole family is super important. And then personal space is very, very important. My son, my older son, at a certain age had to have his own tent, and he was going to set his tent off at a distance. And that was great. He was totally with us the rest of the time, but he wanted to have his own space. He wanted to go off and read by himself. He wanted that campsite to be a world in which he had his own room. We all know when a kid certainly reaches an age when the door on their room closes,
right.
and
he, yes.
and that's true outdoors too.
Yeah.
And I've also, I just want to relate this because it's funny. My older daughter, sort of gave me an education what this is all about when I suggested, hey, let's go to the movies and we'll take your younger brother and sister along and we'll go see this movie. And do you think that's a good idea? She said, yeah, that's a good idea, except it would be social suicide.
Right.
Yeah, we always have to pay attention to what the social suicide thing.
Yeah, the social suicide to be seen with your family.
My word.
But if you're out in the wilderness, it's a total different thing because you have your own world and you're not worried about seeing anyone.
Developing healthy habits isn't as challenging as we think, but it's like all things, it's about being consistent. Do it regularly. Be encouraging regularly. Doesn't always have to be, we're kind of talking about a lot of big ideas. You got to have equipment and skis, and that's money. There's a lot to, mm-hmm. it's a big limitation for everybody to just kind of have that access, and it's important that people know that it's important that we can just go out and walk, though the urban life isn't just as easy to just go walk around town, stoplights and stuff. You do have to drive somewhere. We keep mentioning you have to go to parks to play,
mm-hmm.
Unless you got somebody with a big yard. And I'm still always impressed at just how many kids you can squeeze into a small yard and have
yeah.
some fun if you've got the gear and the idea.
Yeah. One of your stickies here is great at... I just want to make sure I mention it before we go off. It's like, what's the best way to get your kids active? One word, it's bribery.
I'm not above that.
I started buying those big boxes of chocolate yep. bars from Costco. And when my kids would go to Junior Nordic, if everybody had a positive attitude, they got a chocolate bar at the end.
Right.
My dad paid us to go camping once.
And
so,
it worked. It worked.
My wife, her... parents would lay starbursts along the trail in the last couple miles of a long hike.
Uh-huh. That's
that
right.
That worked real well.
It's just a way of keeping it positive,
yeah.
right?
I always ski with food
bribery
in my pocket.
Is okay.
Mm-hmm. Bribery is acceptable. In fact, that's what Healthy Futures is
well,
all about.
Well, actually, yeah, I was right. just going to say, wait a minute.
Well, that's incentives right. and reward for all things are key. Everybody should work for rewards, and they want rewards.
I like that. Incentives and rewards. I'm going to use that instead of bribery. That's a good phrase. Well, this has been a really interesting show, and there's tons of resources on the web if you want to follow up and help with your own family, including a lot of activities you can sign up for. You'll find links to those on the website and the videos we were talking about. Go to alaskapublic.org. I want to thank Harlow Robinson from Healthy Futures, Aaron Kirkland from akonthego.com, and Eric Kyle from Golden View Middle School. Thanks very much for being with me.
Thank you, Charles.
And Aaron Stiasny earlier from Alyeska Ski Club. Next week's show is an exciting one. I was really fortunate to meet Bob Volhaber last month when he completed this incredible 5,000-mile canoe trip through Alaska. He started in Washington on Orcas Island, paddled all the way up the Inside Passage, carried his canoe over the Chilkoot Pass, went down the Yukon River, went up into the interior, went up river, down river, down to Yukon River to Bristol Bay, paddled Bristol Bay, and then up Nooshigak to Lake Iliamna, crossed Lake Iliamna, ended up in Anchorage. One of the most amazing stories I've ever heard, and we'll be playing that in an interview next week, and I hope you'll tune in and hear what he had to say right after he arrived here in Anchorage. Well, that's all for today. Thanks for joining us. Our producer and audio engineer was Kristen Platt. I'm Charles Woolforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Outdoor Explorer and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.